Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So much retro return to talk today. We have Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, Roadhouse, X-Men 97 all dropping. Trailer Park is full as Beetlejuice 2, Star Wars, The Acolyte, Alien Romulus, House of the Dragon, and Furiosa, a Mad Max saga all drop new footage that we got to talk about. Plus, we got to still talk about so much geek TV, including Shogun, Invincible, and the season 2 finale of Halo. And a new Marvel game has made its debut. Welcome to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and today I got my regular lineup of co-hosts with me. It's Matthew Aguilar.
What's up, everybody?
Janelle Wheeler.
Hello, hello.
And Connor Casey.
What up?
Oh, all right, so... You know, I was given the good advice that I can be a bit of a blowhard. So to get to the point and let people know up front what we are doing today. So that's our new intro, guys. I forgot to tell you beforehand. We were arguing about rap stuff instead. But, you know, big rap day. But this is not rapnation.com. So we'll save that for our next segment spinoff. Like I said at the intro, there's so much to talk about today. So let's just get right on into it. And I even gave the like a little rundown and forgot our most pressing thing, which is a bit of breaking news at the top of the show. Janelle, take us right on into it. What's just happening?
Breaking on here. Breaking news. We have a brand new Penguin trailer and it's very exciting. I actually was trying to watch it while you guys were talking about rap, so that was fun.
I mean, it should kind of go hand in hand. I mean, it's rap. It looks like it could be from a rap album, right?
I could hear some 2 Chainz over this. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I wouldn't be mad at that.
Don't sully it.
Wow, you need to chill. But all right, seriously, Janelle, what'd you think?
Yeah, I thought it, for what it is, I think it's awesome. I mean, I think it aligns with, you know, the film that we saw him in. It is high crime, violence, dark. You know, all of those things that we liked about him in the film. And I just feel like it's, I think they're going to do a great job. Is it up my alley? Not really, because I like more superhero-y stuff. We already know this. I like magic and mysticism and, you know, things like that. But this is exactly what it needs to be, in my opinion. And it seems quite disturbing and crime-ridden and, you know, it just dark in general. So, yeah. What do you guys think?
Matt, you and I are kind of in the midst of reading an entire Penguin comic series that we're kind of enjoying that has to do with pretty much Tom King, you know, friend to the show, Tom King. And it is basically kind of the same story, right? It's about how Penguin really took up that power vacuum in Gotham after Carmine Falcone's fall, and how he kind of got oriented with Batman and the Iceberg Lounge, which is what this series is. So, I mean, I like the synchronicity because we're loving that series. What did you think of this trailer as somebody who, you know, is deep in kind of this Penguin lore right now?
Well, I think that's why I was all about this trailer. And I think also to a recent rewatching of the Batman in general, some people were over in that movie ended up being on and, you know, kind of forgot, like, how much I dug that movie. There was a lot of really great stuff in that movie, and Penguin included, right? And you were kind of wanting, I would have wanted even more of his character throughout. So the fact that, you know, we're getting, this is right up my alley. I just love all of this, like, you know, street level mafia style crime. Colin Farrell is just, I mean, this dude is doing such a otherworldly job with this character. And I think a lot of it is also informed by just how much I've seen King do with his run right now, which if you're not reading that, you absolutely should be, because it's phenomenal. So I think it's like a perfect storm. All of those things hit for me. I was already excited about this even before King's series, but now I just think, man, I have never been as hyped for the Penguin. I think in my entire life, it's probably since, you know, Meredith last had the role, right, Burgess? Like, that was like the last time I was this hyped about the Penguin. So you know, good stuff all around.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's sometimes it's funny how just the simplest approach is the thing, like, you should be doing. Like, the Sopranos with Gotham characters is like what everybody said they would want to see, and this looks like the Sopranos with Gotham characters. So well done. So, I mean, and I like the way they keep framing the marketing, like, the not just action and like the comic bookishness, sorry, Janelle, the comic bookishness out of it all, but the other side, like, just scenes carrying the drama, just like letting us know that we have like prestige actors and really talented people who can just sit in a room and have a conversation and really kind of carry this show and make us feel like compelled to the kind of mob drama that's going on. And I think this is another kind of teaser that does that. And these are just teasers right now. So it's just set in tone and the vibe of the show. And I'm kind of like really digging it and kind of just digging what they're showing us and how they're showing it so far. Connor, what do you feel? You'll always come in and give us the real. So how you feeling about this?
I am hyped for this. They keep showing us so little of what this show actually looks like besides just the tone. And I'm still completely sold on it. I want to see, Matt, you talked about, you just rewatched The Batman recently. Think about where Gotham is at the end of that show. The mayor is nearly killed. The city is flooded. And Batman's over here like, maybe I need to rethink my life and how I approach this whole thing. And between now and Batman 2, I want to see a Gotham that still needs someone dressed up in a rubber bat suit, flying around on rooftops, punching criminals. In order for that to happen, we need someone that's a little bit twisted running the criminal empire, and who better than Colin Farrell hamming it up as Penguin. I'm entirely sold on this.
Yeah, and it already looks like Kristen Milioti, who's been in, you know, what was that thing, Last Resort, that she was just in, or that movie with Andy Samberg that was really good. But she's been in a handful of things, How I Met Your Mother.
She's the mother.
Yeah, she's the mother from How I Met Your Mother. But she's been steadily just kind of like showing off what she can do. She was in Fargo. Oh, The Resort was that Peacock thing. She did the Palm Springs, Wolf of Wall Street. Like, she's been in a bunch of stuff. She was DiCaprio's first wife in Wolf of Wall Street. And, like, yeah, she's always been talented. And so I'm really kind of interested to see her as Sophia Marone. And just her going at it with Colin Farrell, this just looks like it's going to be fun. You got Clancy Brown as Salvatore Marone, which never go wrong with that. You got Michael Kelly from House of Cards as Johnny Vitti, you know, who's, if you've read Batman Year One and all that, you know who these people are. Theo Rossi, Carmen Ejego. Like, this cast is pretty, like I said, this is prestige level kind of casting, and it looks like production. So, yeah, this is going to be an interesting step forward where DC TV, between this and just like Peacemaker, which is on the other side of the spectrum entirely, but both of them, if they're both hits, like, I'm still maintaining that DC's kind of getting this TV movie combination thing, you know, together better a little bit, but I just need to speed it up, you know, speed it up.
I will say this, with Clancy Brown being in there the whole time, I'm going to be like, okay, when are you shaving your head and becoming Lex Luthor? Because to me, he is still Lex. He's still the pinnacle.
Oh, he's my favorite
performance. Yes.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, those vocal performances from Superman, the animated series, like, yeah, it's going to be hard to ever beat that. Just like, you know, Mark Hamill's Joker and Kevin Conroy's Batman. Like, they're just some things we can't get over, and we don't need to. We don't need to. Speaking of which, that's a perfect segue about us not needing to get over things into our kind of main topic of the day, which is Retro Return. It just so happened I was like trying to pull something together with all the monumental amount of content we had to talk this week about, like, what would be a theme of this. And I was like, oh man, yeah. And this, by today, this week alone, I've had to see a new Ghostbusters movie, a Roadhouse movie, and the return of X-Men, the animated series. It's like, well, there's your theme. Boom. So Retro Returns is what we're talking.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Starting with the one I can get out of the way pretty quickly, which is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I reviewed this one for comicbook.com and I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. I wasn't the biggest fan of Ghostbusters Afterlife. I thought it, while it was very touching and meta, I also thought it was just kind of uneven in tone, from the very serious family stuff to the more, you know, irreverent ghostbusting stuff. But I got it, and I felt why it was personal for Jason Reitman, who I'm always a fan of from Up in the Air and Juno and a bunch of other movies. And I was still willing to say, like, there was potential in the franchise. This one is, I would say, a step up for me. I would have given Afterlife like a 2.5. I give this one a 3. And I was between a 3 and a 3.5, really, but I didn't want to jump out the window. Because this one is much more back to the formula of kind of the original Ghostbusters films. It's in New York City. They have the firehouse, the proton packs, the car, and they're just this new era of Ghostbusters, and it's set within the same universe as those films. So the old guys are still hanging around, you know, Venkman with Bill Murray and Ray, Dan Aykroyd and Winston Zeddemore, who's now their backer and all that. And so there is, this director was one of the co-writers of Afterlife with Jason Reitman. And I'm just trying to figure out his, Gil Keenan, and he and Reitman are still working on the script for this one. He's just taking the directorial job. They've got better effects and more time to complete them than we got in like the pandemic era of the last one. And this one remembers kind of what made the first films really good, in my opinion, as someone who grew up in that time period watching those over and over and over again at sleepovers on VHS, which is that Ghostbusters is a kind of a weird comedy movie pastiche built around this idea of, you know, scientist detectives, but looking into the paranormal, right? But the movie itself is just like a lot of sequences that often have very weird things happening into them. Like, you know, Ray gets kind of assaulted in bed by a ghost at one point. Like, that's part of that movie. And some of it's really freaky, some of it's very funny, and some of it's kind of like pushing a PG rating a little bit with some of the things that get said and done in the movies. But this movie kind of remembers that and tries to recapture that, and arguably does it better than, you know, what we've seen from the 2016 one or from Afterlife. And I don't think the 2016 one was a complete failure like other people was. I think it was just too polished and too much of a like a Paul Feig movie with that kind of style of bridesmaid comedy. But that wasn't the vibe of Ghostbusters. That Ghostbusters had a kind of different kind of comedic vibe. This one gets that. It's a lot of like semi on the borderline, like adult stuff. Some really weird concepts they take swings at in this one that I've teased. Like there's a whole relationship subplot between a human and a ghost in this one, which gets kind of really weird at points. And so there's also a very big cast and a lot going on, because you have all the people from Afterlife, you have all the original Ghostbusters, and there's all these cross things happening across the generational within, you know, the Spangler family from the last film and within the old Ghostbusters from, you know, the old films, of, you know, having old man arguments about how much Ghostbusting they should still be doing. On top of that, you got a much scarier villain in this one with Garaka, this ice demon. And, you know, scenes where this thing is freezing people and killing people that are actually pretty freaky. And the demon itself was pretty freaky, which I support. These kids need to be freaked out. They think they know too much these days and they need to be scared. Like, you gotta put a little fear into them, that Amblin love. You know what I'm talking about? So I fully support this. Parents, I don't even think like the demon was the most disturbing thing. I think some of the ghost human relationships more disturbing, because, you know, not to be spoilers, but, you know, how that those two try to bridge the gap and get to each other. It gets a little weird, you know what I mean? And I think that's a little bit more disturbing for like teens or young kids. But the demon is good and kind of scary, and it feels like there's stakes. At the end of the day, I feel like this film makes me think that this Spangler family era of Ghostbusters films is something I would continue watching. The cast is just having more fun in this one. They're funnier. Finn Wolfhard's funny. McKenna Grace is becoming like a young star since, you know, she's been acting forever, but Carrie Coon and Paul Rudd are there just to be funny, and the old Ghostbusters are funny. So it's good to be back in this world. It's good to play in it, and this is just kind of an irreverent, fun one with an actual scary villain. So it's more like the original Ghostbusters films than anything I've seen before. So, but it's still a mess, kind of, because the story's a little weird, and it's all over the place. That makes sense to anybody? That makes sense? All right.
Yeah, it makes sense. You sold me. I want to see it. Yeah.
I really enjoyed Afterlife, so I'm probably gonna.
Oh, you're gonna have a lot of fun with this. Like, you're gonna love this. Yeah, and when Ember's a little older, you'll have fun kind of sitting down and watching this with her, because there is like there's a lot of daddy, you know, there's a lot of daughter angst in this, and so you'll appreciate it when she's a little bit older, I think. All right, let's move on. I always got to give Matt like a little dad review, side dad review, part of the show. In this contract. All right, let's get to stuff we can all talk about together, because my mouth's tired. I hate talking. I hate hearing myself talk sometimes. But let's talk about Roadhouse. So this has been a big question mark, right? Because this movie, we were like, everybody was like, you're remaking Roadhouse. You can't do that. And, you know, the Swayze legacy is heavy. You can't touch that stuff without people getting mad. And, you know, Roadhouse is also, just like Ghostbusters, one of those products of the cocaine 80s. That is just such a weird movie that you couldn't make it today. Like, you know, Swayze doing this whole kind of like Zen cooler thing. Like, all of this was real weird in the testosterone 80s. This was like a real deviation. So
he's doing spin kicks in tight jeans. Like, that's how you describe
like
that movie.
It's half ballet, half Zen. Like, it's a lot going on in that movie. But, you know, we love it because there's nothing else like it. So to remake it is automatically an uphill battle, right? So, you know, you got Connor, you take this one. I said I wasn't going to talk, and I'm still talking. Connor, you take this one.
So, yeah, this is a remake of the classic Roadhouse, this time starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It's set down in Florida, and basically he is an ex-MMA fighter who has a dark past, and you slowly figure out what all happened there. And he basically just gets hired on to be a bouncer for a bar that is being overrun by a lot of hooligans, and at least one guy who has some organized crime affiliation, who's trying to tear down the bar in order to build a, you know, big resort, you know, the usual capitalism thing. So I really enjoyed this. I think it's fun. It pains me to say this, being an Irishman, but the worst part of this movie is Conor McGregor.
Oh, come on.
Here's the thing.
I loved it.
It's so much fun. It's fun. It's kind of a modern Western. They even have one character that keeps pointing that out. And even as it builds and things get a bit more crazy, like, it all still feels like a somewhat serious movie. And then a cartoon character shows up, burns down an Italian block while butt-ass naked, and then goes, "I'll be on my way." And every time he shows up, it's like, oh, right, I can't take any of this seriously, because it's just Conor McGregor being Conor McGregor.
I mean, you can't take the whole movie seriously.
No, I mean, it's a dumb, fun movie, but then he shows up and it's like, okay, now it's too dumb. And that's where it leads
too
me.
Fun.
Like,
honestly, I would have turned it off.
Other than him, the least believable thing is that they're in Florida and it takes 45 minutes for somebody to pull a gun. But it's other than him, it's a really good movie. Yeah.
Janelle, this just feels like shots fired at your whole state now.
It's fine. He doesn't understand. He's not from Florida. It's fine. Also, Florida is huge, guys. It's literally like
the Keys are
a different thing than Miami. Miami is a different thing than Orlando. You know, Jacksonville is completely different. The Panhandle is Alabama.
Tampa.
Like, yeah, it's literally like you're in like 20 different countries when you're in Florida. It's so weird. But I will say, like, I did not know this was a remake. I was like, why am I watching this? I started it and I was like, oh my God, this is, and then I was like, oh, it's in the Keys. Okay, cool. I'll watch it, 'cause it's in Florida. And you know, I recognized a lot of the scenes and that was really cool. I in the original, is the story like verbatim? Is he a fighter?
Roughly, yeah.
Was it always in Florida? Like,
No, it was like out in the desert in the first.
Okay.
One,
right? Yeah.
Okay. Well, I loved the ocean stuff. I mean, I loved like the boat stuff. I loved the crocodile stuff, even though I had to Google. I was like, wait a minute, we don't have crocodiles in Florida. We have gators, but we do have crocodiles apparently in South Florida. And
the original's in Jasper, Missouri.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I loved the McGregor. Like, also shout out the Post Malone is in this fighting, which is hilarious. Like,
Post Malone music is playing. That's where you had almost lost me in the beginning.
Yeah, me too. I was like, wait,
dude got his own character poster, then bails the moment Gyllenhaal shows up. I'm like, what the hell?
But it's fun. It's something to turn on. The action and the fighting, I think, is spectacular. Like, the fighting is just really awesome to watch. But like, you get hit that many times in the face from like someone that strong, like, you die on the third hit. Like, you can't take that many blows. Like, it's obviously not, you know, this one guy flies off a boat onto a roof. That dude would be dead, but somehow he's still alive. Like, you just have to, you know, use your imagination a little bit and just kind of have fun with the fact that this is just a high fight, like, action, violent movie. And I probably would have turned it off if it weren't for McGregor, because I was getting real bored. With just the story. I was like, I get it. Okay, so he's trying to defend. Like, give me something else.
Then he gets mad and basically goes full rampage. And he's like, I just broke your trachea. You can't breathe. And I'm pushing you into a pool. It's like, oh, he's a serial killer. Okay.
Well, I mean, wait. Let's just set context here, because that is an Easter egg. The original film, the premise is that Swayze's character Dalton is like the best bouncer in New York City, which during the 80s was like a war zone in the 70s and 80s. But one night he got in a fight with a man and he ripped his throat out. That's where like throat ripping comes, if you've ever seen that in comedy movies and stuff. He ripped his throat out, and so he has to relocate to Missouri, and like, where he's haunted by his own violence. And then he gets hired to be what's called a cooler, which is to basically just settle things down at this kind of country ass roadhouse. And then it's the same kind of premise. The gangsters want it. He's like, nah. And eventually he has another fight where, believe it or not, he rips a guy's throat out at the end, you know? Like, and so it's just, it was like, that was kind of a thing about it, is like, he's like this cool, like, that's chill guy, but like, oh no, I think he doesn't at the end. He doesn't rip a guy's throat out.
Not like, to kill.
Yes, his big growth is he doesn't rip the guy's throat out again. And so
he had the Magneto arc. Know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, very much. So like, he then is just like, I'm better now. So there, that is an Easter egg, but it was this kind of weird jump where he's like, you know, trying to Bruce Banner it most of the time. And, but he's just like this guy who can really like just beat people to a pulp if he really wanted to, which is what this movie is kind of aping. But I agree that it, like, I disagree with everybody who was like, you should have put this in theaters. Like, guys, from now on, let's just all chill until we see a movie to really make that assessment. Just because there's a really good trailer doesn't mean it should be in movies. The sound design on this is horrible. It should never have been in theaters. There are so many like redubbed lines and ADR lines that I'm listening to them with these noise canceling headphones because I like to really kind of get the sounds of it. And it is, it's not a great sound design in this. And some of these scenes are really kind of not staged well. But like you said, the action and kind of just the overtop hilarity of it is kind of the charm. The one serious drama part I thought was really good in this one was when we got what's his name, Billy, I always butcher his last name, Billy Magnuson, the guy who plays the criminal son, you know, that guy, when he goes to the bar and he's like, and you find out, you know, Gyllenhaal's characters, or why am I calling him his character, Dalton's origin story, and that part, and there were little moments of drama like that, which is really good.
Daniela, like, when that happened, I was like, all right, Doug Liman made this, and that guy's got some bangers to his name. So it's like, all right, a real director made this movie.
Yeah, exactly. And there are moments like that where you're like, oh, yeah, this is really good. And Daniela Melanquier from the Suicide Squad, it continues. Although how she ended up in Florida and with that accent and all that, just don't ask. But, yeah, she's still proven to be, like, a really great, you know, actress. And there's a lot of people who show up in this that you recognize from, like you said, Post Malone to Conor McGregor to Joaquin de Alameda from, or J.D. Pardo from, you know, Mayans and stuff, who was the guy who the first bully he beats out. So it's a fun movie, but I think they did it right. Like, I think just streaming it on Prime and letting people enjoy it as a big Prime release was smart, and to kind of go that way.
Matt, I feel like, how do you feel?
Sorry. Go ahead, Connor.
I was going to say, last thing on this, I feel like this should be one of those TNT mainstays where it's just a random Saturday and they just take a 2-hour chunk and put this on and it's just there forever.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the perfect slot for it.
Yeah, cable B movie is, and that's no shade. I mean, some of the movies I still watch the most are like U.S. Marshals because they were pumped into
me. I love U.S. Marshals.
See, exactly, right? Like, they pumped it into you through cable so many times that, like, yeah, you want to see Wesley Snipes take that jump with the Kaz and do all that stuff.
Yes!
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, man, like, I get it. And I agree wholeheartedly with Connor. Like, yeah, put this on cable, have it on a Saturday, and I'll just be like, oh, that Roadhouse. And it'll become, you know what, that might be the best thing for it, because in that way, it'll become just like the first Roadhouse, which is how most of us know that movie anyway, from just random either references in comedy movies or other things, or just cashing it in on cable and being like, oh, that is that crazy Swayze movie, and watching me like, really, what is this? Like,
come to think of it, that is how I saw the original.
Exactly.
I was on cable one day. Yeah. And then I think I came in like halfway, and then I went back and watched the whole thing.
Because
I was like, okay, I got to know how this starts.
You got to know how exactly I got to. And then you get to the throat ripping in the very beginning. You're like, whoa, this is a very different movie than I thought it was. Yeah. Oh, man. Oof. I'm getting a little too hyped over some Roadhouse here, but yeah,
I'm not going to lie. So you kind of got me, because I haven't had a chance to see it yet. But I think it got me more hyped to watch this movie. Because I go in with, when we first saw the trailer, I went in with like, oh, this is going to be stupid fun. I'm in for it. I like when you're remaking or reviving, or however they kind of phrase this, right? Roadhouse. I feel like you kind of know what you're going into. So, you know, it sounds exactly like I thought it would. So and this is the perfect streaming direct release. I think this is perfect. So yeah, one of these days coming up here, I'll just pop this on and I'll be I'll be happy, I'm sure.
All right, so that is Roadhouse, and it is now streaming on Amazon Prime Video. Last up for our retro returns is X-Men 97.
Yes!
Lawsuit. Oh, boy. And I'll be honest, I'm going to get mine out of the way real quick. I was ready to come on here and really go off on X-Men 97. I rewatched the old series, which was not a pleasant rewatch for me. I was like, oh, man, there's a lot of this that's kind of rough. And I saw the first episode and I was really just, I mean, I got mad. There's like a bling reference. That's 99, bro. And there's like a rave scene. And I was like, we were not raving like that in the late 90s. Come on now. Like, I remember this. But I got to say, by the end of the second episode, I'm back in. They got me. I'm back in. You know, you get an episode where it's just like Trial of Magneto, the Executioner, and that Storm depowered storyline all in one. Like, it reminded me of what I loved about the original, which was the first time getting to see a lot of the craziest X-Men comic concepts actually thrown up on screen, even if that was in some rough animated form. And this one has a little bit tighter animation, but yeah. And we're already segueing into things like Inferno. Like, it's pretty nuts. And it's just that cheesy X-Men comic goodness that I can't help but love by the end. But even if I don't love all the voices, but we'll get into that. Janelle, as somebody who's always... Janelle, you're always can be on the fence about animation. So how did you feel about us making you watch? And X-Men. Oof, this I didn't realize how much of this potential...
Double whammy. Was
for you. Yeah. I like my throwback X-Men because I know these characters, like I'm familiar with them, so it's not intimidating. Like, I didn't live under a rock in 97. You know, I was like, I was a kid, I was around it, I was exposed. And yeah, it just felt very reminiscent of what I remember from the show. I didn't go back and rewatch at all, so I couldn't remember storyline. I didn't like even remember every character and their, you know, capabilities and personality and things like that. But I feel like they did a really good job of kind of just explaining it all and getting you linked in, even if you don't have that extensive knowledge of these characters in the background. So I appreciated, like, maybe it might have been boring for some of our expert friends, but I appreciated the first episode that they kind of made it very crystal clear. Like, this is what's happened to Professor. Like, this is our villain. This is, you know, the kind of strain between humans and mutants. This is everybody's power sets. Like, these are the relationships. Like, I got all of that in the first episode. I think that was really important, especially for anyone new who might be tuning in for the first time. And then, of course, it's beautiful. It looks like a comic book, which I love. I miss that. And, you know, I've really enjoyed it with Invincible, and I really enjoy it here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good TL. Okay. So, and Kofi mentioned earlier, right? I get dad reviews, right? Well, there's not a more fitting one for this because, my munchkin saw me starting to watch this on my laptop and went, "Oh, what's that?" And I was like, "Oh, this is like X-Men." And she was like, "I won't watch." So she sat in my lap, right? And we watched both episodes back to back. She was enthralled the entire time. She had to go get a juice and she asked me to pause, right? So that's how you know, like, I don't want to miss anything. That was the, like, I think the best possible way I could have watched this, because she would ask me questions like, "Who's that?" And like, "Oh, okay." And you explain stuff and you go back to, "Oh, and this is what happens." And it was like a perfect bridge to when I was a kid and this was out, and it was my end all be all. X-Men the Animated Series was I adore Batman. And Batman the Animated Series is an all-time classic. But X-Men the Animated Series probably holds the higher place in my heart because it's just, I love X-Men. And so for this, you know, there's things that, like, my now brain would pick up on that, like, would take me out of it momentarily. Stealing, like, some of that, the, like, there's pieces brain of dialogue, you know, that, like, don't click with me now. And I'm like, "Oh, that sounds like really, like... why does it stick out so much?" And then there was like little choices, like certain voices you know, are authentic because it's like the original cast, but like they don't click for me as much now. And I, and it's like, so like there's things about like the, I guess, modern critic ear that have grown up around all this stuff that like would momentarily take me out of things. And then I will go, okay, but number one, like that is a voice from the original, like that's how it sounded. And then I would also take things of like, but that's also how the dialogue was then. So it's like, if I take my, it's like there's parts of it that like if I turn my critic brain off for a minute and go, but this is actually the style that they are picking up on. Like it's authentic to the experience. You know what I mean? So like I have little nitpicks, but I got to say, like by the end of the first episode, you know, I was in. And then episode two, I'm glad they released this in a batch, because like two is where, my God, like that episode just rules across the board. And I thought they, you know, they did a really good job of capturing that feeling. I will say they did my boy right. Cyclops is like my favorite X-Man. And
dude, that
boy,
thing when he drops out of the sky and lands using his optic blast.
The first
oh, slid
battle
out of my,
scene.
I was that Vince McMahon me. Oh, I can't even use that anymore.
The first battle scene where he's using his optic blast in like four different ways. He uses it to move him across the floor quicker. He hits another guy with an accurate beam. Then he hits a wide one. Then he like uses it to move him like a dash. Like the way they interpreted the powers here, I mean, obviously we've seen like the Gambit, Wolverine bits and things like that too, but like I mean, everything from, I'm obviously getting into spoiler territory here, but like Rogue uses her powers in a great way in episode two, and it's like in the moment makes perfect sense. And it's again, it's always showcasing like the versatility of their abilities. There was also a gold balls reference, which I adored. Yeah. So like they did a good job. I thought they captured the feeling. I have nitpicks and stuff, but like honestly, I'm in. I want to see the rest of the season, and there was really no going to be no doubt about that. But now I'm like, it's 100%.
I just realized my friend is in this trailer. Oh. Cosplaying. What? Yes, like my longtime
in that
friend.
One. Yes, in that
she's
scene.
Jubilee.
That's awesome.
She's, oh my God, that's crazy.
That's crazy. I just want to say,
we had on repeat.
No, I just want to say, from Matt's point, like one thing I do like is it's clear, like some of the things that we've talked about, because, you know, we started this with the Krakoa era of the comics, is they really are, I feel like one thing Jonathan Hickman really has cemented into X-Men lore from here on out is mutants using their powers in circuits. Because there was a lot of that in these episodes, from like Magneto and Storm combining theirs to just, you know, doing that. But then I realized, like, also X-Men the Animated Series was one of the first places we really got that in that last episode, because the whole thing is like Xavier and Magneto combine their powers to, you know, save. Anyway, but I liked that we had that, because that was really cool. And like that really is kind of a key difference for mutants, is like, and so like, yeah, the Gambit Claw Wolverine, like that was amazing. And it looked even better when he just takes that, you know, when that thing whole playing thing plays out. But I'm liking that the X-Men, like you said, they feel like they live in these powers. They feel like they work as a unit, and all of that is really well done. So digging it as well. Connor, how'd you feel?
Man, I was ready to come on here and tear this show apart after that first episode, because the animation outside of the action scenes, I was comparing it to Flash animation from the mid-2000s or the motion comic preview trailer we had last week for the three X-Men lines that are about to come out. We've already talked about the voice acting. Them fighting robots to me has never been interesting. The Sentinels are only interesting when the mutants are on the back foot, not when they have the advantage. Then episode two hits, and it hit me like a truck, where I go, oh, this really works. To where you have Magneto in my personal opinion, his most interesting position, which is ex-villain trying to be better as a hero for Charles. To me, that has always been Magneto at his most interesting. The animation starts looking better. The voices, yes, you can tell the age on some of the actors, but it starts to click. Everything with Storm and getting depowered, the very obvious January 6th parallels. The speeches from Storm, from Magneto, he gets like three back to back to back, and you're like, oh, no, this is really working. So by the end of if you just watch episode one, you might be like, this feels like a relic. Episode two, you go, oh, no, wait, they have something to say, and it is fantastic. So I am completely sold on this show. And that's coming from the negative guy on this podcast. Come on, y'all.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. I mean, yeah, I think it is, as Matt said, it was like really smart to release both episodes first. Because as Janelle said, I think Janelle pointed out from her perspective, that was very necessary, just getting re-immersed in this world. Who's who, what's going on. And then, yeah, episode two really proving that, like, because my whole thing is, you know, with these retro kind of shows and comics and, you know, from the Batmans to the X-Mens to everything else, is do you have something actually new to say and modern to say in the skin of this retro thing? And episode two really proves that X-Men 97 does. Like Connor said, it has a lot to say about things that are clearly about right now. Like, yeah, when they all start running, I'm like, okay, like I see where we're going with this. But just the layers of that Magneto thing for right now about, you know, my people have been through stuff, but I'm trying to chill. But if you can't chill, I can't chill. And like, you know, all this thing is like, there's so many geopolitics in this episode that I was like, man, this is an X-Men cartoon? Like, yeah, well done. So I'm interested to see, because it feels like it'll balance X-Men for what it always is, which is obvious, really deep social, racial commentary and cultural commentary, plus some of the most outlandish comic book stuff that we've ever seen. And by the end of that very serious episode, we have a soap opera twin drama that's on our laps, right? So, like...
And one of my favorite lines from the second episode is Jean shouting, "He's coming," and Wolverine's like, "Who, Apocalypse? The baby!"
Yeah, well, that is right. Hilarious scene. And there's a comedy in this, yeah, and then she, like... He's so, and I just love it that he's like such a slow man about it, that she just psychically like throws his wallet and keys in his hand to be like, let's go, like, get me to the hospital. Yeah, there's a lot of fun. I mean, there were funny parts in this. So like, yeah, it's interesting. And there's a whole world to this already. And I wanted to not like X-Men 97 this much, but here we are. All right. Anybody got any parting things before we take a break here?
I want Rogue's power just to be able to touch a doctor and be like, and now I have a PhD.
I want Rogue's power to touch her own throat and change her voice, but that's me. Yeah, all right.
I will say it was nice seeing Bishop is a great addition to like the full scale lineup, you know, because like obviously he was featured in the original show, but like having him like be a full time a part of the team, like they used his powers in really cool ways. Also, Ember is now a Jubilee fan. That makes me extremely happy.
All right, there you go. Matt's happy. Let's take a break. When we come back for the second half of Comic Book Nation, we still have a bunch to talk about. We have so many trailers to go through and talk about, plus what's happening on TV, Shogun, Halo, Invincible. Stay tuned for all of it. Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. We had a pretty full first half where we talked about the Penguin trailer and reviewed Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire, The New Roadhouse, and X-Men 97. We got to keep on rolling because the trailer park is looking full today, starting off with something a little bit fun that we decided to hand off to Janelle Wheeler.
Yeah. Guys, Beetlejuice dropped. I'm so excited. However, I feel like this trailer did not give us much. Like, I have no idea what the story is going to be about. We don't get a good look at Beetlejuice, but we do understand that the area is all reminiscent of the first film. So we have where the car accident happened, the little bridge. We have a funeral. I don't know who for. And it looks like Lydia comes face to face with Beetlejuice at the end of this trailer. So... You know, I would have liked I thought it was Lydia. Oh, no. Oh, it's the daughter, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we know some story. Lydia. We know some story elements. There's a synopsis that came with it. So we can.
Right.
We have...
But if you're just watching the trailer, you don't get a lot of information, but you get a lot of nostalgia, which is great. And I feel like that's what we want. His hair doesn't look right, though, to me. That's my one criticism. Beetlejuice's hair looks different. And his voice sounds a little different, too. So I'm going to be a little critical. This is one of my favorite films. I adore Beetlejuice. So, you know, my expectations are pretty high and I am cautiously optimistic. How are you guys feeling about it all?
I think
Oh, I think that I'm just going to say one thing. The Beetlejuice look thing, I think, is this is one area where I think a long sequel actually works for a character like this, because, you know, no offense to Michael Keaton, who still looks great, but like him being older and looking older just makes his character look like wilder and more decrepit in a way, which I think works for Beetlejuice. So I was kind of like, okay with that part. I was just like, oh, I was like, yeah, I'm down with that. And that part I wasn't mad at. I think that there's some interesting things. I think this is a good teaser for me, because it's just to kind of let the world know, because you got to remember, we are in deep in a nerd bubble, in a geek bubble, and like we've been on this the whole way, but like the larger mainstream world is just finding out that it's just been like, I've had a lot of messages like, hey, you know, this Beetlejuice 2 thing is happening. How crazy is that?
I'm like, crazy. Long time until it releases. Yeah. So,
yeah, exactly. And so this is like a first early teaser, but it's just pulling out the big guns, right? We got Michael Keaton. We got Winona Ryder back. We got Catherine O'Hara back. And oh, for you Gen Zers, it's your girl, Jenna Ortega, is up in this. So, you know, like, they're just hitting those beats. And we know that this is going to be about a death in the family. I keep trying to make out who's on that tombstone, but it's most likely I would bet either Lydia's stepfather, Charles, or if she was married to somebody or with somebody, that person died, Astrid's father, which is why she's all messed up. So I think it's kind of be, and Tim Burton has said, for me, I like this because I think this is good for like us who grew up with Beetlejuice, because Lydia's now middle age. She was like the goth kind of counter rebellious daughter in the first one. But obviously time changes and becoming a parent changes you. And when you have, this speaks to me directly, because I am in that place where like I have my kids yelling at me. I have my parents yelling at me on the other side. And I'm just like, what is life? this is what it means to be middle age. And so I could see this being fun from the Lydia perspective of that, of trying to now deal with your own kid that you made when you were a weirdo, plus your crazy stepmom that have made you weird in the first place, and them working stuff out as like three generations of these Dietz women is going to be interesting to me. And then of course, like what Beetlejuice has been up to. We know he has a wife because Monica Bellucci from The Matrix is playing his wife, and what that all is about, and like how the spirit world, you know, factors in, and how it speaks to kids who are dealing with stuff today, I think is going to be all interesting to me. So I'm in. I mean, but I was never going to have any hate for this. I was arguing with a friend who was like, Tim Burton ain't done nothing like in years. And I was like, well, he did direct those four episodes of Wednesday and come up with that show, which made me a believer again. But like, yeah, he's got something to prove in the movie direction front. But I think I'm optimistic about this one so far.
No, I think it looks solid. And like you said, Kofi, I think this feels like the right time to put out one of these, to where we can get multiple generations and it's not just all callbacks to what happened with the original. And Keaton looks great. And I do think him actually aging makes the character make a bit more sense. My one thing, and it has nothing to do with the movie, it is entirely everything to do with the trailer. I know for years now, we love doing the slowed down dramatic version of songs as the backdrop for trailers. Of all the songs to do, Fonte's Banana Boats doesn't really work.
Yeah, that's a hard one to keep bringing back. And I was actually getting into this conversation with somebody also. Yeah, it's not helping Tim Burton's case in certain ways, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so iconic with the first film that like,
I get it. It's the original. I don't think when they're like daylight.
Yeah,
it's
yeah
like,
I think
children most cannot people be think, singing this right now like this, please.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's a weird one. It's one of those things you don't want to think too much about. But then again, this is like this is that weird Nickelodeon doc week. So yeah, you got to think about these things a little bit more maybe. But yeah, it is a weird choice. But I think most people think it's Daylight Come or something like that instead of. Yes, a song by Ari Belafonte called Banana Boat, which is all about, Cuban farmers having to basically indentured servant themselves to harvest bananas and while the master's yelling at them and so they can make their quota for the day. So it's a kind of a slave song. Yeah, it's a little problematic. But hey, wasn't it catchy in that first one? Wasn't it though? All right.
I mean, it wasn't just catchy. It was like the defining scene of the whole
yeah,
film.
Yeah, yes, it is.
It's hard.
Life is
a
weird.
Hard place. Yeah, it is interesting that they chose that though. I will agree.
Yeah, it's like, woof, you guys are just taking the swing with that one. And yeah, a whole children's chorus too. Okay, we're doing that. All right. But yeah, I did like the footage, and I think like just everything I see from the construction of it, I thought was good. Matt, we didn't get to you, Maddie, did we?
No, but I mean, I think you guys said it really well. I mean, I kind of agree that like with Janelle on the fact that like this was, I understand why it's needed. So like, I know like certain teasers and trailers aren't necessarily like, always built for me, right? And so I'm totally fine with that. But I will say for what I was looking for, it was a little too short. And there wasn't enough on this for me to like get super hyped. I've never been like the biggest Beetlejuice person either. Like, I enjoy it, but it's not like my like all-time classic, but I really love Wednesday. So I like Tim Burton, a lot of other Tim Burton projects. So, I'm in for this. I am looking forward to seeing like a full trailer for it to get a better sense of like if I will be jumping back in so soon. So
that, how can me. You be smirch Beetlegeist? My God. All right, let's keep it moving on to something a little more creepy. And the one that really kind of stuck out for me this week, Alien Romulus. So we have a new Alien movie coming, Alien Romulus, and it's being done by Fede Alvarez, who, as this trailer tells you, is the man who did the Walking Dead, Jesus, Evil Dead remake of the 2010s, and Don't Breathe, which if you haven't seen Don't Breathe, excellent horror film, go check that out. So when I heard that Fede Alvarez's next project, because he's been notorious, I mean, this guy is like Quentin Tarantino of horror films, right? Like, he's just always like, I don't know. He produces a lot of things, but he's just like, when it comes to him actually wanting to get behind a camera and make something, like, it's usually pretty special when he jumps in. So I was hyped when I heard he was doing this. And this first trailer is the kind of teaser that I like. It is basically a teaser that tells us that we're going back to basics with this Alien movie, and we're getting back to what made the first one really stand out, which was tight claustrophobic quarters and body horror. And, you know, body horror from a very kind of reproductive body horror, which is the essence of this entire franchise. And when it's the best scenes you remember are all about that. And it just looks like they are condensing and filtering that down into another movie like this, with even more of a threat than the first Alien movie had. This ship looks like it is overrun with face grabbers already, which quickly can turn a very populated ship into a very big death trap. And I am here for it. And if it's that simple, I am here for it. And even Aliens, which seems to trick you by making it seem like it's bigger in scope, is actually in some ways even more claustrophobic, because it's them stuck under that reactor, or them stuck in that base, and that's pretty, or stuck on the ship at the end. So it's just three kind of choke points that they're stuck in throughout the movie. And I love that about, that's what I love best about Alien. We've been reading Alien comics and stuff on here. This franchise never dies for me, because there's so many permutations you can do with it, and so many ways you can make it a good horror kind of series. So this was an effective teaser with me, and the fact that it's going to be younger people, it looks like, taking this on is, like I said, these kids need to get some hair on there, or wait, that sounds weird, they need to get some metal in their backs. So like, this is going to be interesting for me. I don't know, like, some metal in their spine, I don't know, to get tougher. This is what I'm trying to say, Connor. I'm trying to say, because you're making faces for the non-video people. The expression
is hair on your chest.
That's why I stopped. But I did. That sounds weird for kids, so I stopped. Like, oh, man. So, yes, they need some courage. Let's just keep it to basic language. These kids need some courage, and them facing the monsters in the dark is a good kind of lesson, I feel like. Janelle, you can hate horror sometimes. I always like to get you as a kind of a test, as a control to my madness. So what did you think of this teaser?
I mean, I really love sci-fi. I love space. I love aliens and all of that fun stuff. So this feels interesting to me. And I don't feel as horror like vibes as, I mean, I obviously it's bloody, and it honestly was making me think of the latest Halo episode when I was watching this. But but I'm quite interested in it because of the space aspect, really. Like that speaks to me. So I'm more excited about this than I would be, say, like a ghost or, you know, some weird supernatural thing. I'm more into the alien stuff. So yeah, I could definitely get into this. I'm definitely going to watch it for sure.
Maddie, how do you feel? Because I know this is not your cup of tea.
Well, so here's, you know, it's funny. Janelle brings up Halo, and I feel like that was my, like I have a ceiling of how many creepy, crawly things I can deal with. And that was like, that was my ceiling.
But then Halo was also like The Last of Us. We're like, what is going on? Like,
so I was like, okay, I got this. And like, yeah, no, this is, you know, for, again, no disparagement to the quality of the movie or the trailer. It did its job. I'm freaked out and I don't want to be in this place that they are in. So, you know, it sold me. I get it. I will probably, you know, I will watch this. And I will watch it with like one eye closed, just so that I can.
Yo, Fede's movies are. I'm gonna tell you, no matter how like Fede, I love them, but Fede's movies are never easy rewatches. I can tell you that. Nope. Connor, did you already comment on this one, or do we need your take?
I haven't. And so my thing about the Xenomorphs is that they stopped being scary when we started throwing Space Marines at them. So it's been decades of this, and we've had multiple alien installments. We've had the Alien versus Predator duology. We've had Prometheus and whatever the hell that last Alien movie was supposed to be. And my thing has always been with them, it's at this point, we're decades into this, we've learned so much about these creatures that the fear of the unknown that was in the original is long since gone. But like you said, Fede Alvarez movies are hard watches. They are intense. Especially that Evil Dead from about a decade ago. I think if anybody is going to make me be afraid of these little bastards again, it's this guy. So this trailer sold me.
Yeah, and in the comments, Eddie Raymond, we know from production they're using like a combination of CGI and practical. Like they have actual face grabbers and practical effects and puppetry and stuff. They're going back to some of that too. So
one note about this, because Fetty's done some interviews already. Apparently he showed it to James Cameron and Ridley Scott, the directors of the first two. They both liked it, but they both had different notes on it, which tells me maybe he found a happy medium between Alien and Aliens.
Yeah, that's a good sign. I would take that as a good sign. If they have different notes and it's not like the same complaint, like, yeah, one's going to be like, needs more Marines. One's going to be like, needs less guns.
Needs like, to be scarier and have Michael Fassbender playing with flutes.
Yeah. All right. But I mean, I'm in for this. I can't wait till this comes out. I'm happy to see Alien back on the big screen. Matt, take us into the black.
Yeah. So for those who have been following the show for a minute, everyone knows my glaring blind spot is Game of Thrones. I was very much just like missed the boat completely. And so House of the Dragon season one was my entryway into the franchise in a lot of ways. And it did the trick. I mean, simple premise. I was engaged with all the personalities and characters. So I was very much excited for season two, and man, this trailer did not dull that at all. I am hyped, and I feel like in a lot of ways the premise is almost simpler this time around, in the fact that it's just like it's a battle for, you know, being the rightful heir, right? That's what this is. It's a war between two sides, one the rightful heir and one not. But I just think I will also say, and I'll leave the praise that I feel like is coming from Janelle for a certain person in this trailer to her, because I know she adores him. But I will say there was like one person that like almost stole the entire trailer for me every time he was on screen. I was hyped for this. This did the trick for me.
Okay, Janelle, you want to take that baton and run with it?
Dude, I miss bleaching my hair. I need to get my hair done again. I love the Targaryen crew. I love them so much. I really was kind of nervous about like the gap and how much time they were taking and if I'd kind of lose interest, because I did kind of run out of steam on Game of Thrones. I really did. But these trailers blew me away, both of them, and got me even more excited to the point where I'm Googling like, oh yeah, who plays this? Like, where did we leave off there? Or, you know, just trying to remember everything, because there was a shift in actors with like time jump in the first season. I'm kind of having this moment of like, wait a minute, who is that again? Whose son is that? Who's, but obviously I remember the very impactful moments of like the death of one of the kids and like, obviously, you know, our main characters. But yes, I'm obsessed with Matt Smith. He is such a rock star, and he's like the best. The amount of Doctor Who that is in the show is so exciting. I found out that Ty Tennant, who is the son of David Tennant, my favorite doctor, is one of these kids in it. And I didn't know that the whole first season. So yep. Now I'm like, please, please, let's bring this back, because I'm obsessed. I'm so excited about all of it. I hope you guys can feel the energy. I'm thrilled. I'm so excited for this to come back.
Yeah. These were interesting, and I love the marketing that they did for this. If you know your Game of Thrones history, I was a big Game of Thrones nerd. Their House Targaryen kind of split into these two factions of the Greens and the Blacks. Hightowers. Alison Hightower and her family kind of led the Greens as putting Aegon, her son, on the throne after Viserys died, while Princess Rhaenyra and her faction were the Blacks. And the Greens and the Blacks, this is the Dance of Dragons that we've heard so much about. And so, yeah, I love these two trailers kind of giving you both halves of the story and showing you, because they are physically separated, and just showing you the arcs of both sides throughout the season. I thought that was a very clever kind of marketing way of doing it, not overwhelming you, but like kind of in, you know, even making it a friendly kind of competition to see which one gets more views or more comments or interaction and all that stuff, and see which side is loved or which side is hated. And like, yeah, that's all good stuff. And like Matt said, it's probably the most simple Game of Thrones seasonal premise we're ever going to get. Yeah. Like, this is as simple as it gets. You took a throne. You're not right. We're coming for the throne. Leah, I'll see you in hell. Try to take it. Like, you know, boom, let's go. So I love that we don't have to do like crazy long preamble to all of this, that we can just get into it. And this is why I'm kind of liking the idea of more of these Game of Thrones spinoffs, if they are shorter seasons, because I don't see this one going past four seasons, like tops four
seasons. They honestly could end it after three.
Yeah, and I hope they do. And I hope then we get the story of Aegon the Conqueror, which they're already working on. And, like, we can keep this real quality high, like, just get to the main stories, have the political intrigue and everything we love, but just get to the main stuff a lot quicker. We're not waiting eight seasons for zombies. And, like, we're just get to it and tell these good stories. And there's a bunch of them we can keep telling, you know. And so I hope we continue the flow. I like seeing the cast and the aged up cast kind of hopefully settling in even better. And if you know this story and some of the stuff that happens, like, yeah, there's already teases of it and I'm hyped. And yeah, it's going to be exciting. And I'm ready to get our fake English accents back on and House of the Dragon and get out here and start doing our thing again. Connor, you have anything to say before we move on?
I loved the idea of splitting these trailers into two, because it shows different sides of, like, there's a brother on brother twin fight, there's going to be dragon fights, so you almost see the shot versus shot comparison of like, okay, which dragon is fighting who. Matt, you said it already, this is going to be a much simpler season than last time. There is no big time skip, there's no big confusion about what actor's supposed to be playing who. It's a simple war story now, so you're getting a lot of dragon fights, a lot of people dying, a lot of bodies dropping, a lot of war crimes. We get the return of the Stark family. You see one of the sons up at the wall. You're going to meet the progenitor of guys like Ned Stark. We're going to see old school Winterfell. Like, even if you were a longtime Game of Thrones head, there's a lot to look forward to in this season. And even if you're not, stuff's going to get crazy.
All right. Connor, real quick, just take us on to our last trailer. We don't have to get too deep into this one because it's just a second trailer. But how did you feel after seeing it?
Yeah, it's Furiosa, latest in the Mad Max franchise. It's more of what we saw in the previous trailer. It's Anya Taylor-Joy getting ripped from her home by Chris Hemsworth with a bad nose prosthetic. And honestly, people keep talking about the CG and how it looks. I think it looks great. He's the most distracting part with that fake nose. But
this still looks incredible. The action looks insane. Joy looks awesome with the shaved head look that Charlize had years back. I think this one is going to steal the conversation this year.
I wish they didn't make this trailer. I'll be honest with you, because I love George Miller kind of trailers. It's just showcases of action and noise and visual spectacle. And it's Mad Max. You really don't need that much story to it. So I thought this one overdid it a little bit. And it makes me wonder, does, you know, I hope they have confidence in this, like Fury Road, because like I really love that movie and I'm hoping big things for this one, but I feel like this one showed me a little too much and I just wish it had been just more stylistic like the first one. But I get it. You got to market movies and nobody's taking chances. But yeah, I mean, this one has my IMAX money for sure. So it's already done. Anybody else? Da-da. Anybody else? Matt, Janelle?
I feel like we've already built like so much excitement for it. Obviously, there's more story to this trailer and I'm okay with it. But, you know, I'm excited for it. But I've already seen so much of it that it's not the standout this week for me of all these trailers that dropped.
All right. That's fair enough. Matt, you have anything to add? You just want to co-sign that and get to your thing?
No, I mean, I really dug it. I typically like more trailers than less. I'm just that kind of person, right?
So you're the problem.
Yeah, pretty much. I think I am in that you're respect because I like to see it. I take so convincing, right? I like to see a lot of trailers. Get me hyped up. But this one, I mean, I'm hyped. I don't think it necessarily needed it. I just enjoy seeing more of the movie. But I think Taylor Joy is going to kill this one. I'm hyped for this. I think it's going to be
good. Anya's on one right now. And even with the fake news, I want to see Chris Hemsworth having fun being bad. Like, I think that's going to be – the man's just charismatic. And I think he's – that line, but can you make it epic? Like, that alone is just already a line. You know what I mean? So I just want to see
a Fast and Furious Jason Momoa-style movie from him. I need this.
Yeah. Matt, this is a trailer none of us really saw coming this week and came out of left field. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So Marvel teased a while back, actually, one of their new projects from Skydance, 1943, Rise of Hydra. It was teased before as this very story. It's from the Amy Hennig, famous for the Uncharted series. Bias confirmed, it's one of my favorite franchises, right? So I've been very excited to get a game from her because a lot of her projects and stuff have just not come to fruition. So very excited to get a story-driven game here. It is set in the year of 1943. Obviously, it is a younger Captain America. And what's interesting is, especially from this trailer that sticks out, is Black Panther is actually Azuri, which is T'Challa's grandfather. And so Kerry Payton does the voice of Black Panther and my God, just kills it. Every time he talked, every time he spoke, I was like, yeah, give me this, please. In fact, I wasn't as keen on Cap's voice because, you know, I will say I've liked other renditions of the character. So I'm not sold there, but all the other voice acting amongst the other kind of four main characters here, you're going to be Gabriel Jones is a U.S. soldier and Anali is a Wakandan spy. And then, of course, it's Cap and Black Panther. Those are going to be your four main protagonist characters in this. But I mean, it looks gorgeous. It's hard to dissemble, like to decipher, like if there's actual any. There doesn't really seem to be any gameplay here. It's all CG trailer. All. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the, you know, the moving back and forth of like Cap's shield and stuff hopefully gives an indication of what they're going for, but you know, it's kind of hard until you start to see some HUD and some gameplay mechanics and see how this is going to actually play. But you know, Hennig has a good resume, so I'm hoping it works out. But it was really pretty, really impressive. It got a lot of discussion going. It's not till 2025, but you know, so it's a little ways away, but not as far as maybe some people thought. So excited for this. Any thoughts on this one?
I will say, I just want to say, I think there are a couple quick shots of just like establishing shots of like characters running or just like kind of moving around a level. I think there's like one or two of those. And that's about it.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the way Cap looks in his face because he looks so much like U.S. Agent from Falcon Winter Soldier.
He does.
And I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable because I feel like I'm watching him instead of Cap.
But at the same time, that's Wyatt Russell, so I forgive them for that.
Yeah.
But no, this looks great. Matt, like you said, we need to see some gameplay because think of how hyped people were for Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League until we saw gameplay and we realized, oh, crap, this is live service. I don't know
got Joker.
I don't know how that could happen here. I don't think it will. Given who's behind it, that this seems very much targeted at a single player experience. Christ, I hope that is the case, but I kind of have to hold my breath until then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to be keeping an eye on this. 1943. This is interesting. This is an interesting one to adapt for a game, but we still got a lot of video Marvel and DC games in the works. So I'll be hyped to see this. And I love that they made Kari Payton look like Kari Payton in the
yes!
which is, if you don't know who that is, he was Ezekiel in The Walking Dead, and he's like one of the more prominent voice actors.
He's Cyborg, baby.
Cyborg. Teen Titans Go, baby.
Although somebody did point out, when you watch his conversation with Cap, there's a couple of lines where he sounds Jamaican, and now I can't unhear that.
Oh, there's a Black Panther game being developed by EA right now as well. That's like its own thing. But I'm not going to lie. Can I just get a game featuring that dude? Like, I just need this Black Panther in a game. that's what I need.
I'm really hyped. Also, we got the first trailer for Star Wars The Acolyte this week, but we don't have to go too much into that because we did a whole reaction episode. Me, Matt, and Connor hopped on and gave you our reactions to it. So, Janelle, let's just clear the floor for you to give your two cents so we know how you feel.
I mean, it looks beautiful and really interesting, but I have no idea what this is about.
Nobody does. Don't worry about it. I don't know those references.
I know everybody's freaking out about the line about like not trusting your eyes or something. Like, I don't remember that reference. Like, I'm gonna definitely watch it. It's on Disney Plus, and it is Star Wars, which I've been having a blast with. But I don't know if this is like something that deep cut fans are gonna love. I just don't understand, but either way, I'm on board. I'm about it. I legit have no idea what the story is about or any idea of what this is based on.
That's okay. You're not alone. Nobody does. The High Republic is something that launched while we were doing this show. And so we've covered it. Like, I've covered a lot of it. Matt's helped me do some of it. Like, but a lot of people in mainstream Star Wars never read the High Republic books or comics and have no idea what it's about.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter because this show is set between that, when that line is doing its stories for about 150 years of content, and the Skywalker saga, which starts anywhere from 300 to 200 years after the High Republic begins. This is set in the middle. This is set 100 years before the Skywalker saga, which is 100 years after the events of the High Republic that we are reading in the books and the comics. So this is unknown space. Nobody knows what this is. So this is kind of a story, and we have no idea what this story is about, because according to main Star Wars, by the time in episode one, The Phantom Menace, when Darth Maul's running around, everybody doesn't believe Qui-Gon Jinn because they're like, bro, nobody's seen a Sith in 1,000 years. As far as the Jedi are concerned, when they destroyed the Sith Empire, which led into the High Republic, because after that, it was a golden age. The Sith were gone. The Jedi and the Republic kind of, flourished together and everything was cool. They say that there was no Sith between the end of that empire and when Palpatine and Maul start popping up in the prequels. So there being a red lightsaber in this trailer is problematic because it's like, wait a minute, we've heard there was not supposed to be any in 1,000 years. So now what's this mess at the end of the High Republic era? And how does it bring down and it can't fully collapse anything, but how does it start the downward slide that led to Palpatine, bringing the Sith back? So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they pull that off. I have my own theories. I mean, we do know there are Sith Lords. There's Darth Plagueis. There's, even Palpatine, where he started and decided to become a Sith. How long these people have been alive, what their ages is, how they've extended their life. There's all these questions. There's a young High Republic girl who's in this, who's now older 100 years later, and she's the one with the bald head and the green and stuff like that. So she's aged up. So they're playing, they're basically playing with connecting the High Republic line with the Skywalker saga line in a mainstream direct way. But we don't know how that is. So we'll find out. For deeper thoughts, please go to the Comic Book Nation feed and download our Acolyte reaction bonus episode. Thank you.
That's a great
one. All right. So we don't want to get too bogged down because we're getting to the end of the show, but we got to check in with some geek TV. The one I want to spend the most time on is, of course, Shogun episode 5. Man, this show, I mean, it's going to be hard for me to beat this show as show of the year for, and that's, it's early, but I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be hard to beat this show for show of the year. Every time this is on, my entire world just falls away. And like for that hour, I am just in the world of Shogun. And, you know, party episodes are always, like we say, you know, a party episode or like a gathering episode is always one that's so tricky to do because there are just so many, so much subtext going on between the people who are gathered. But man, this show did a like a gathering episode with that awkward dinner date that was, woof, that was just next level. And yeah, I think I just wanted to see an entire GIF series of Fujisama making faces while other characters are doing stuff, which the Shogun team actually reached out to us. I can say that behind the scenes. And that's one of the subjects they want to talk about possibly is the editors. Like this was a part of the show they purposely wove in, was just like the female characters reacting to things in the background, which is its own show in itself. But, this was a masterful episode and there's so much that happened, but like, I love that the show episodically is not doing what a lot of shows is. It's just like, oh, we are one long movie and we just cut it up. No, like every episode has a point and like a theme and an arc. And by the end of this episode, just staring at a rock now is going to make you feel all kinds of ways. Just staring at a rock and making sure that rock got put back up is like everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and it's just, man, this show's nuts.
You could have called this episode Culture Shock just for all the things Blackthorn goes through here.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Accidentally, accidentally killing the old man by a mistranslation. He's like, you guys were willing to do that over a pheasant. Seriously. And he's shocked by it. And they push back and they're like, no, this is how we are. But even then, he points out to the husband after he abuses Fujisama is just like, no, sake ain't an excuse, and to hell with cultural norms, you're just a dick. And even Sonata at one point is like, yeah, I know we have the whole thing about husbands and wives, but even I'm not okay with this. And it's like, oh, okay, so Blackthorn actually has a point. And that culminates at the end of the episode where it's like, you can't be getting upset about an old man dying. For one, I'm using it as part of a plan that I've got going on, and also people die here. We're surrounded by death. If the earthquakes and tsunamis don't kill you, our culture will. But then he goes and saves him from the landslide. He's like, oh, well, maybe the guy's got a point. And maybe it's not so wrong to actually value life. Well, and he laughs when he hands him the swords, even though in their culture, that doesn't quite make sense. And he's like, huh, okay. So I feel like there's common ground for them to find. I like that.
I'm saying one thing I just want to push back a little bit on is because this is a tweet I had that keeps gaining ground as it goes on in the weeks is about the takes of this and the readings culturally. And one thing I loved about the Shogun book that the show is even enhancing more is that there is no clear-cut cultural perspective. There is no Western perspective, Western white guy perspective is correct
right
in this. My favorite line in this is just, and Torinaga is the best character, is when Blackthorn's going on and he having that breakdown and he wants to like leave, and Torinaga looks at him and just like, and he's going on about the old man. He's just like, stop acting like a child. Like you in just those simple sets of words, it's just like, yeah, you are in a culture where you don't understand like what you say matters, what you do matters. There's a ritual to all of this. And you're just haphazardly running around, you know, playing kind of like, you know, guy from another thing and just acting like your cultural sensibilities are the only ones that matter, but they are not. And that's kind of the point. It's a humbling episode for Blackthorn in this, where he's got to realize, like, you know, he wants to make them out to be barbarians and all that stuff, but like they're just like, no, dude, you just don't understand like what duty is, what our culture, you know, family, duty, all these things you don't know. And it's interesting to see, you know, how this old man's life, what he thinks it is versus what it is in this larger kind of chess game. Mm-hmm. That they decided he was like, yo, I'm sick and this is what I'm gonna do because this is a good end for somebody of my status. Like, that's deep stuff to like really consider, and then how that gets used and how it benefits in his life and all that. It just makes you think, and I like that. And there's no one clear-cut perspective on people, on culture, on, you know, all of that. It just really kind of makes you think. But Matt and Janelle, what'd you guys think?
That is amazing. The show is just bad. It's so good. I mean, I keep Matt, you take this one. I feel like I keep just talking and talking.
Matt, oh, Matt's muted, Matt.
Hey. There it is. All right. I finally did it. I haven't done that for
yeah,
so long.
I know. It's been a while.
I think you guys really said it best. I think that's a lot of like, we covered a lot of ground there. I have nothing really to add other than I've just been really enjoying it. And I always enjoy cultural conflicts as topics in shows. I think it results in some of the, when handled correctly with nuance, you know, it results in some of the best TV in a lot of ways. And so I thought, again, I love that moment. I think this was handled really well. I'm also very much like, you know, Thorne could use a little humbling every so often. So I'm like, okay, when that happens, you know what I mean? But other than that, I thought you guys, you know, said it really well. So I'm enjoying it. It was great.
I have an interesting take. I totally forgot. My in-laws were visiting and they're, you know, in their 70s. And I tried to tell them about the show because like my father-in-law is really into Civil War and like historical stuff. And just like he's into all of that stuff. And I tried to tell him about the show and I got them really interested and they were like, oh man, we can't wait to watch this. And then I go, but there's subtitles and you have to read a lot and you have to pay attention. And they just immediately checked out. They were like, oh no, like we're not, this isn't the show for us. And I hope that a lot of people aren't too turned off by that. And I don't know if when I'm telling people, if I should tell them that those are there or if I should just convince them to watch the show and then they can learn, they can find out on the, because
well,
you can't
make sure you tell them there's an English dub. Yeah. You can tell them there's an English dub. Yeah.
Right.
Make sure you sell that part. I mean, at the point that people are like, I can't read subtitles, they'll watch an English dub.
Yeah,
it's like when Parasite won the Oscar and Bong Joon-ho goes up and says the half meter barrier of subtitles. Once you get over that, there it opens up a whole world to you. So it hurts me when people are like, oh, I can't do the show because of subtitles. It's like
me too.
You're missing out on so much.
And the dubbing just does not do it justice. No.
But they won't know the difference. They won't know. Mm-hmm. How will they be? What are they comparing it to? The thing they don't want to do.
All I'm saying is you can't do laundry while watching the show. You can't like cook dinner. You got to focus.
You shouldn't. No. But I don't think that's like, I don't want to do laundry while doing the show. You know,
I mean, I don't want to either, but.
Oh, I do.
There's a content.
I want to be as productive as possible while I watch TV. That is exactly who I am.
Me too.
No, I think there's levels of TV. Like, yeah, I'm going to do things for a lot of
during
shows.
Any TV, I have a podcast going in between when I am walking from one room to the other room. I must be doing something.
We're so aligned.
And listening to something and doing like laundry or dishes. That is me. That is who I am as a person.
Which, except not with this show. This is the one show. This and Halo, I've actually been sitting down and taking the time to like watch. Yeah,
I just pause this a lot. I just go, oh, I got to go do that and pause. I was like, nah, so I'm not.
You
got
wild.
I got crap
There's
to do,
nothing,
man.
No.
Sorry.
No. I look at everybody. Bro, I got a lot to do, too. But I just take 1 hour. This is my one restorative hour where I'm like, yo, I'm just going to wrap myself in a blanket, sit
That's
down.
Yoga for me.
And put this on. And, yeah, I'm getting this in. So y'all are wild. But we got to get out of here. But let's talk about Halo. We have a whole recap of Halo season finale and an interview with showrunner David Wiener that's up on the Comic Book Nation feed in our quick save segment. But yeah, hype finale. I'm just hoping I'm pulling for season three. I know Connor wasn't in the boat, but I think the three of us were in. I thought this was a great finale compared to, especially compared to season one. And yeah, I need that season three blow.
May I defend myself?
No, I was supporting your opinion. I wasn't attacking it. I was like, I didn't think they got you, but I know they got us. But yeah, go for it.
But I dug the finale because I think when it comes to the Bungie era of Halo, what people forget because it's so overshadowed by the multiplayer experience is that the single player campaign, it's mostly sci-fi horror, especially when the Flood shows up. So I thought, why did episode 4 with Reach and why did this episode hit me as hard as it did? It's because it actually dove into those horror elements. With episode 4, it's the horror of war as this unstoppable alien force comes in and just wipes out everybody. And with this, it's the Flood where, like Janelle said, we're getting Last of Us vibes with this. They honestly held back with how twisted and deformed the Flood makes the infected look. And I hope
Twitter. Oh my God. Halo Twitter is the worst. You all are the worst on gaming Twitter. You're the worst. I'm sorry. Wow. Absolute trash takes. Like gaming Twitter, like you guys are trash, man. And they sorry, say, man. But it's like, jeez. Yeah, all of gaming Twitter. You guys go touch grass. Like people were freaking out because there was a first stage infection. You meet the Flood in Halo when they are fully like infected. You gotta, in a TV show, it's okay to show the progression of infection. We see the person who was infected first eventually start spitting out tentacles, and it's like, okay, when we get to later infection, guys, there will be some of that horror stuff. Touch grass till then. Look at the sky. It'll be okay. Wow. Listen to our Halo bonus episode for the finale breakdown.
Seriously,
Matt, can you imagine if Kofi knew about wrestling Twitter? My Lord.
I've dipped in a couple times.
Of them hold a candle to Star Wars Twitters. I don't know what you're talking about.
Good God.
Star Wars Twitter is the worst. Wars Twitter is awful. I don't know.
Twitch streaming Twitter is pretty crazy as well.
That's bad too. This really is just our segment on
Twitter sucks.
There are lots of bad bad places on Twitter, and you shouldn't go there.
Black Twitter's popping up. I got to support Black Twitter. Yes, that keeps me hilarious. That's hilarious. All right, and Invincible's out still. We also have an Invincible recap episode with Logan Moore. This is one of those more moving the pieces episodes, but you know, it was pretty solid. So Invincible still happening. If you want our full breakdown, check out that on our feed as well. When me and Logan Moore talk about this latest episode and what this show's doing right, what it might not be doing so right, and where we might be headed next. Anybody have any strong thoughts of Invincible before we get out of here?
No, but the Doctor Who trailer just dropped 26 minutes ago. Golly, what is going? Why are all these? Why are they all dropping right now?
I don't know, man. This week is crazy. I'm so tired. I am so tired this week. I am so exhausted. Like, oh my God, I have fallen asleep on my computer multiple days this week. And it's just like, just trying to get up a Ghostbusters review right after seeing it at night, trying to get all these recaps done for podcast and written. Like every piece of news is dropped this week. Like it's been an exhausting week. I'm getting out of here. We're going to sign
up.
I'm going to listen.
But exhausting.
Shout out to the Midnight Boys. I'm going to listen to some Midnight Boys and chill out for the rest of the weekend. But yeah, man, I'm exotic. See, I can't talk anymore.
I'm exotic.
Exotic, Kofi. You are.
I've said so many questionable things already on this podcast because my brain is mush. I'm exhausted. But I am exotic.
If you guys want to chat about the Doctor Who trailer, feel free to tweet me.
Yeah, tweet Janelle.
Doctor Who Twitter is not toxic.
No, there are some good Twitter fandoms. Like, yeah, there's some real positive ones, man. Like, yeah, there's some great ones. You just got to go looking. And these days, those threads can get a little hairy. So be careful. The guardrails are off.
So
you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me on YouTube at Connor J. Casey.
You can find me at Janelle Wheeler on everything except for Twitch, where you'll just find me as Janelle.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar.
Okay, yeah, Matt's having a breakdown. We're going to get out of here. We are Comic Book Nation. Go on our feeds. We have Anime Initiative, which is heating up. Shout out to Megan Peters, Evan Valentine, and Nick Valdez from our anime team. They've been killing it on Anime Initiative. Also listen to Quick Save, our gaming segment. Matt pulls comics every week for the pull list, where we break down the best in comics, the big publishers, and the indie guys. Got a lot of indies coming out. Biker Mice from Mars and all kinds of
things.
Matt Aguilar and Jim Viscardi, we let him out of jail for 5 minutes and it gets nuts. Check that out if you want to hear what's going on with the MCU, including some deeper examinations of X-Men 97. Head over to the Phase Zero feed and check that out. And if you're looking for Pokemon latest, head over to A Wild Pokemon Has Appeared, that feed for all things in the Pokemon gaming community. All right, I'm tired, going to rest. Matt Aguilar, Janelle, Connor, thank you guys again. There's so much content. Go see something, read something, watch something this weekend. We are Comic Book Nation. Peace.